The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Circling the Bases podcast, the official fantasy baseball podcast of NBC Sports Edge. I am your host, Matt Williams. Joining me on the show today to recap the weekend in fantasy baseball, Ever, you should know him. If you don't, you know, shame on you, over at Elite Fantasy. He's the fab whisperer, Mr. Vlad Sedler. What's up, buddy?
What is going on, Matt? Always a pleasure to talk to you. I think last we did voice-to-voice, I guess, was about a year ago.
Yeah. Was it on your show, the last we spoke?
Yes, had you on my live stream back in the pandemic days.
Yeah, with Jeff Zimmerman. Yeah, the good old days. But the baseball season hasn't claimed too many victims with COVID this year. In the very beginning, it was a little sticky, but overall, I think you got to be pretty happy. More of the nonsense has been more like weather related, umpire related than anything, to be honest.
Yeah, and I was just thinking about how what a fun summer it's going to be. Like, even though the ball does seem a little bit different, and obviously batting average across the league is down, right? Like pitchers are just crushing it right now. Yeah. But there's going to be some big scores happening this summer, and a lot of our offenses are going to heat up, thankfully.
Yeah, and I mean, everyone's kind of pounding the table. Either you're really against early season victory laps, or you love them, or, you know, right in the middle where, like, you don't care. It's just as long as you don't take it too seriously. But it's the only point I like to hammer home is you go ahead and jump to conclusions for people that you think are a breakout. You only have so much time to pick them up. That's what the end of your bench is for. Recycle the end of your bench. But everyone giving up on early players. Like, I have this beat Matt Williams, OC over at NFBC. Someone dropped Austin Riley. The only weakness on my team was power. And thank you for the present. So yeah, don't drop anyone that you took in the first, like, you know, whatever, 15 rounds of a draft. You know, you got to give it a little time for the guys, at least the ones that you did research on, you believed in for a reason. You got to give it a little bit of time, unless there's a change in playing time or an injury.
Oh, then that's the beauty of fantasy, is it doesn't matter what level of competition of the league you play in, there will always be people that are impatient and they drop players in April. And, you know, we were just talking about it before the show. I mean, I picked up in a pretty competitive 15-teamer, Corey Kluber, who, you know, I put in a $120 bid on him. The backup on it was 31. No one was interested in him. I wasn't even sure if I was that interested in him. Figured I'd take a shot. He had two starts on the board, and man, you know, a couple of gems there. Picked up a $30 Patrick Corbin. Not sure how that's going to shake out over the course of the season, but yeah, I mean, Aaron Hicks is being dropped like nothing. Like, people just, you know, just leaving gifts for us to pick up and make our teams better.
Yeah, like, just a simple piece of advice for anyone listening. It's, if you're wondering if you should pick someone up who's off to a slow start, because a lot of things seem like no-brainers for certain decisions, but then when someone's actually faced with a decision, your brain plays tricks on you. Like, oh, he's off to a bad start. Am I going to look foolish? A, don't care what other people think. Do what you think. And two, if it looked like, think of what you thought preseason. If the day before the season started, you thought this would be a great idea, then just kind of roll with that. If you have a spot on the end of your bench, like you said, 30 bucks on Corbin, Patrick Corbin, you said, yeah, go for that. I mean, if it doesn't work out, what if you're out? You're at $30 in a bench spot you didn't necessarily need, and you move on. We'll get into the highlights of the weekend. Obviously, Corey Kluber worked out very well for you, but we're going to start off with all of the injuries right around the corner. Before we get started, just a special deal for our listeners, NBC Sports Edge, Bases 10. Use the promo code BASES10 if you want to sign up for any of the NBC Sports Edge premium content, MLB, NBA, NFL, everything. And that's for any tier or yearly, monthly, anything you want to do. Use the promo code BASES10, get 10% off any of that. And so getting into the weekend roundup, which, like I said, it's a lot of injuries. We'll just kind of take them one at a time and we'll go through all of them because unfortunately there were a ton. Dustin May, I mean, you're a Dodger fan. It was unfortunate to watch. You know, he threw, I think, his 94-mile-an-hour fastball, and then immediately there's something wrong. The last time I checked, it was just he went on the injured list before he actually had his MRI, which I believe will be Monday. We're taping the show Sunday night, and he went on the IL with right arm pain. Was there an update that you know of, at least for now? By the time this comes out, maybe there'll be a further one.
No, and I really do think that most likely we're going to get some sort of update on Monday, unfortunately. And so people are really, they're in that pickle. They're in a tough position. We've talked to several folks who are doing different things with it. Some people are waiting and holding a week because they can afford to do so. They're going to be able to fill their full roster and just see what happens and just make sure that that it isn't what we all think it is, unfortunately. But most people do seem like they're going to be dropping him. Folks are about, I mean, we're not doctors, but about 90-95% convinced that this is not good, Bob. So
it's unfortunate. If you're a Dustin May shareholder or a fantasy manager, what can you do here? I mean, you just hold no matter what, even in 10 team, right? Wait for the official word, but let's just say, starting at the most shallow leagues, 10 and 12 team, how long can a player like this afford to be out before you are just cutting bait? Like how long of a, because this will go to like not just Dustin May, but any player, someone that is of decent value to you. Where's that kind of cutoff where how long they can be out before you're willing to just, you know, not spend a spot on them?
Not long, really, unless there's some sort of good prognosis, because on 10 and 12 teamers, there's always solid replaceable value, and even more so on 10 teamers. You're looking at who's available among the free agents and probably a lot of good pitchers, right, that you can pick up. Even in 12 teamers, I'm in a spot where I do have a Dustin May, and I am thinking about just kind of jumping the gun and burning him, even if it isn't the best idea, even though it might be wiser to wait a week, but that just happens to be a team where I need to fill a starting pitcher spot. I think I have a pitcher that I has an incredibly tough matchup or something. I just don't want to play him, in that matchup. So I'm going to go ahead and just do that. 15 teamers where I have Dustin May, an absolute hold. There's nothing wrong with waiting a week just to make sure that, see what happens there.
All right. Luis Robert. This is interesting because it came out, if anyone watched it, he was hustling down, beat out of infield single. And to me, just to the naked eye, I thought, oh my God, he shot his hamstring, or it looked like he stubbed his knee, but it turned out to be a hip flexor, which I watched it 3 or 4 times. I don't know how the hip even came into it. So, I mean, I don't know how long he'll be out, but I mean, I consider that good news based on what I thought it looked like. It looked horrible. So all things considered, you know, you don't want him to have any kind of injury, but Luis Robert, did you happen to catch the video of that?
I did catch the video. I agree with you. It did look pretty bad. Of course, manager's reaction was like, oh, it'll be okay. He may not even go hit IL. And of course he does. The real sad part is he hasn't really gotten warm yet. He's had a pretty cold April, you know, some hits there, some homers here and there, but he hasn't really gotten what we want out of him. So this does kind of put a strain in things. And yeah, we just pop him on our bench and wait it out.
There's not really much in terms of this doesn't open up spots or at bats for anyone of note necessarily, because I mean, now they're forced to, I guess, play Andrew Vaughn, which they weren't, you know, it took them long enough, but they were doing that anyway now. There's no one coming up from the minor leagues. There's no one coming off the bench here. Unless you happen to like anybody that I'm not seeing. This is more just it is what it is. Luis Robert is out and there's nothing coming to replace him of note.
Yeah, but I guess who's going to be moving over to be Adam Eaton moving over to center? Or Billy Hamilton will play more? Or?
Yeah, that was their first option originally. So that kind of leads me to believe that there's no one worth investing in, I guess, immediately. There's no matter what you're looking at there, there's probably more interesting options on the waiver wire regardless somewhere else.
Yeah. And then of course, Adam Engel, I believe he's dealing with a hamstring, so he's not coming back in anytime soon. But just talking this out with you, man, I mean, if somebody, this is crazy, and maybe you'll never have me on the show again ever again after this comment. Man, what if Billy Hamilton actually plays almost every day this week and just steals 4 or 5 bases out of nowhere? Desperate teams could use it.
Well, I mean, he's been bad for a long time and people had rostered him forever just on that assumption. If he plays, he's going to steal bases. So I guess that still holds. I don't know. You know, we'll see if you're desperate enough. You know, if you had Tim LeCastro and he went down and you have no other options, then yeah, sure. It could be worth it. It's not like you're going to be getting a bidding war into Fab, which this will air after Fab. So we'll see how that kind of turns out. But I'm sure some people will be looking to invest in that area. Trevor Story, he had a finger injury. There's no fracture. The x-rays came back negative. It seems like this is going to be a short-term thing for him. So hopefully no worries there. A couple of catchers went down. Travis d'Arnaud, they listed it as a thumb sprain, and then they immediately put him on the 60-day DL, which is kind of the funny thing. We were talking about this in an industry chat. So the word sprain is somewhat misleading because it can be anything like, you know, out for a week to out for several months, because a sprain can be a tear, because a sprain is a tear. It's like a slight tear. Turns out he has a totally torn ligament in his thumb. He's out a couple of months. William Contreras is coming up. Any interest there? Which they actually had a couple of injuries go down. Alex Jackson also went down. Mm-hmm. So they brought up, I can't think of his name, veteran, who 38-year-old veteran, Jeff Mathis. So yes. he gets another crack there. He'll get some time, but William Contreras will be the guy, you know, for the most part.
Yeah, so where I play in is mostly NFBC, and in that format, until somebody's actually played a game, they're not eligible to be picked up until the following day, which in turn becomes the following week. So Contreras playing his first game on Sunday, the day that we're recording, means that he's not available in those leagues. So of course, if you're in a deep league that is not NFBC and you need a catcher, I think because of there being some other injuries to catchers kind of throughout the league, you may have a few guys that you can bid on or pick up in really deep leagues. But Contreras, if he has a good week, he's going to be a popular pickup next week because catcher's always, always thin.
Yeah. And speaking of that, Alejandro Kirk, and this is a bummer, hip injury. He goes down. I don't know how long he'll be out, but it's tough to hold catchers, especially even in a 15-team league sometimes, because, I mean, you have to carry two. It's not like carrying an injured catcher. There's no IL in NFBC. He finally was starting to get heated up. He hit a couple of home runs the other day. But, he's a bigger guy. So there's some people that kind of had this, you know, worry that how can he hold up long time over catcher? And then a lot of them are taking I don't want to say victory lap, but they're kind of like taking the I told you so route today. How do you feel about Kirk long term? Because it seems like this won't be a long term stay. And there were some people, I mean, myself included, who believe that if given the at bats, he could be a top three hitting catcher, maybe the best hitting catcher possibly in all of baseball if given the chance.
I absolutely love Alejandro Kirk. And unfortunately, in the Platinum League that myself and a partner were in, we did grab Kirk late. And I do know that there were some, there were other people that were going to pick him up if we didn't get him where we could. Unfortunately, could not hold him because the number one rule, at least for myself with catchers, is you just don't carry a third one. And Kirk wasn't getting the playing time. And just one of those things that you just kind of have to let it go. This week, up until that injury, he was going to be going for a crazy amount of free agent budget because, you just don't find that type of solid catcher available on waivers quite frequently. So now with this injury, it kind of changes things, puts him on the back burner for a little bit, but something to keep an eye on when you're starting to hear good news of him progressing and sounding like he's going to come back, go ahead and get him in because the guy is a stud. Unfortunately, the team is so loaded, it's hard to even get him a DH. That would be ideal to play him there. But he's going to be a name to remember for years to come.
Yeah, that was the hope, right? In spring training, before they started signing Marcus Simeon, George Springer, and everybody, because no one was really sure how aggressive they'd be. The idea was that Kirk would be the DH. That went out the window really quick. Rowdy Tellez, who they sent to the minors, which, you know, if anyone hasn't noticed, that was more of a logistics thing. They were facing a lot of lefties. Springer was going to be playing DH first time coming back, so he'll be back up too. Ian Happ, he went down. He had a collision with Nico Horner while playing the field. I didn't really get as far as this recording. I don't have a real strong update on him, so that's just
something. Better. Yeah. That's all I heard.
So as far as setting lineups, I mean, I think you'll hopefully hear something. This luck, you know, it's better when you have, not, I shouldn't say better, like Bryce Harper was an easy sit for me over the weekend because it's, you know, Friday, at least a Friday to Sunday, you know, after getting hit in the face, which how is he okay? He's like an android. He got hit right in the face. But Ian Happ, that's a legitimate decision. I'd say that he's probably going to be fine, but I mean, he's been disappointing anyway. So how would you deal with Ian Happ, assuming you just had, you know, someone you felt good about on the bench? If how do you, just not him specifically, but, you know, talking strategy, if you have one of these things on a Monday, you know, a Monday to Friday, where, or a Monday to Thursday, I should say, where you have a player like this that you'd like to start, you're really not sure, you feel like he's going to play, but, you know, him even being out one game would really decrease his value.
Yeah, I mean, this is a situation where you always want to make sure you don't put yourself in a position to take a zero for the half week, for the week, for whatever it may be. So if you have to be able to put yourself in a position to have somebody to replace him, should he not be in the lineup on Monday, I think that's the absolute most important thing. In shallower leagues, in a 10-teamer or a 12-teamer, he's a potential drop, to be honest, because I think there's enough good hitters out there. Sure, Happ is going to have a nice summer in Wrigley at some point, have a nice streak, hit a bunch of home runs, but the bottom line is he doesn't play every day, and he does kind of crush the batting average.
It is interesting how they signed Jock Peterson at the beginning of the year. They're like, oh, we're going to play him every single day. We don't care about the matchups. And all of a sudden, Ian Happ's being sat. It just blows everybody's mind. But he obviously has done nothing to earn an everyday spot back yet. Tommy La Stella also down. It's not a huge thing. I mean, he has a jammed hand. Haven't heard anything. Wilmer Flores is probably going to benefit here, getting in some regular bats. Honestly, Tommy La Stella is his biggest contribution to fantasy this year, is kind of screwing up the at-bat situation in San Francisco the second he signed there. So La Stella, is he in the same kind of boat with as Ian Happ with you as far as value?
Yeah, exactly. To me, the just kind of on the different spectrum, because he doesn't have Happ's power, but he can really contribute to the batting average category, even though he hasn't necessarily been doing that this year. In deeper leagues, it could be an opportunity for maybe Mauricio Dubon to get some more at bats. Maybe, you know, because Wilmer could play some first base as well, Wilmer Flores, that is. So maybe Dubon can switch over, sort of a utility guy, but he can potentially play some second base.
What do you think of that? What do you think of those Giants, by the way? As a Dodger fan, you're watching them maybe closer than the rest of us. I don't know the even odd year thing with them. They got off to a ridiculously hot start with their pitching, which, you know, can't last forever, at least for all of them. How legit do you think they are in terms of, it looks like Gabe Kapler, at least, you know, he didn't have it in Philly. It looks like he has some kind of thing going where the veterans last year, where he is, you know, he kind of, I don't know what the word is. I don't want to call it magic, but I mean, with the analytics, he does have something where they have a system that's in place that's making them overperform and get the most out of they can out of what they have there. So do you think this is just some early season Royals stuff, which I know the Royals were underrated to begin with. They got Daniel Lynch coming up pretty soon, so they're exciting. But yeah, Giants, is this like a legit or kind of nonsense thing from them early on?
No, I do think it's legit. Unfortunately, they have the tough draw of that division, so they're going to have to get in another way, not by winning the division, because I don't think that's a possibility for them. But last year was a good sneak peek into that. I mean, there were a lot of days where we just we saw the sort of this new offense really crushing it at times, and the ballpark played a little bit differently, which is something we're not used to over the years. And they have an interesting mix of guys. I guess they're basically your Tampa Bay Rays of the National League. And the way you look at their lineup, and they have all those lefties and all those righties, and you kind of know every day, depending on who they're facing, who's going to be playing. You know, it's going to be Darren Ruff and Wilmer Flores and Slater coming in when there's a southpaw on the mound. And then when a southpaw's on the mound, you won't have Alex Dickerson in the lineup. La Stella sometimes won't play. Now they've added Mike Tauchman. Mike Yastrzemski's coming back on Friday. So I kind of like them from a fantasy perspective, and especially when they go to Coors, it seems like all the time.
Getting into the prime, out of the injuries finally, and into the high producers of the weekend. We don't have to spend a lot of time.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Time on our first pitcher, Shane Bieber. He has 68 strikeouts in April, which is the most ever. He actually set the major league record for most consecutive starts with 8 Ks or more. It's 18 that he passed Randy Johnson to lock that down. The last time Bieber failed to get 8 strikeouts was September 25th, 2019, when he struck out 7. So he almost got there again. There's not really much to say here. There were some that were worried with Shane Bieber going into the playoffs. They thought maybe he was showing off some of his warts with the home runs. But, you know, Max Scherzer, Gerrit Cole, there's really good pitchers that just give up home runs. Justin Verlander's one of them. So Shane Bieber, do you like him any more or less than you did before the season started? Or are you one of those guys that just had him, DeGrom, Cole, Bieber?
Yeah, I think I was pretty much in that boat. I was off of him. I wouldn't say off of him. It just I think I was liking the hitters in that range, the guys like Yelich and Trout that were going around there. But then when push came to shove in the first main event 15-teamer that I drafted, I had the 10th spot and was picking between Bieber and Yelich, and I took Bieber. And so far, obviously, don't regret it. Obviously, those that have taken a first-round pitcher, especially whoever's taken DeGrom, have been exceptionally pleased. And so, man, it's just really nice to know that almost every time your ace takes the mound, you're going to get probably double-digit Ks out of them and, just really great ratio help for the most part. But you nailed it. These guys, it's okay that they give up some home runs. I mean, they're not superhuman. They're not going to go out there and do complete game shutouts every single game.
They're all home runs usually. So that's the thing, right? Don't do it with men on base. Yeah, I have one share of Bieber. Unfortunately, like yourself, for the most part, I like the hitters. I felt DeGrom was in a tier of his own. I thought Cole was in a tier of his own. And I thought he was closer to the rest of the pack with Giolito. Yeah. I mean, obviously that's not looking right. I kind of went into the turn. I have a lot of Aaron Nola type stuff. So, I'm fine with the hitters I got, but yeah, Bieber, obviously very legitimate. Freddie Peralta, who I have a ton of shares of, but I drafted him early on, assuming he was going to be a middle reliever, because I wanted to stock up on pitchers like that with the uncertainty with innings this season. This worked out to my benefit with, people going down with injuries left and right. Freddie Peralta, 6 innings, 1 earned, 7 strikeouts versus the Dodgers, which is an important start for him because before this, he had a sparkling ERA and whip, but it was against like the Pirates. He faced the Cubs a couple of times. He didn't really have a test. So we were about to see whether, this was quite legitimate or not. We knew the stuff would play, but doing it against the Dodgers are completely different.
Yes, he's looked absolutely phenomenal, and obviously kudos to you for picking up all those shares of him. The most
kind of lucked into it.
hey, you take it any way you can. But to me, the most important thing is that he's remember when he first came up and that very first start I believe that he ever had. I think he threw 95% four seamers.
Yes,
and obviously that was unsustainable, and so it's nice to see him mixing in the slider. And then his other two pitches, I think he's got like a changeup and something else, but he's mixing those in at least 10% of the time, which is something, So it's not just he becomes a lot less predictable, and obviously he throws heat. So I'm liking what I'm seeing out of him so far this year.
Over on the LA side, I think this is the start that excited me most as a Mets fan. Anyone non-Mets related is Julio Urias. 7 innings, 0 walks, 4 hits. 10 strikeouts versus Milwaukee. 7 innings, 10 Ks. I mean, those are the numbers because he has always been good. He's always shown to be good. It just seemed like he was missing that extra gear that kind of took him almost like early career Zach Wheeler, where he couldn't, like, he was good, but he necessarily couldn't pull the trigger on, like, going longer. And then especially transferring that into strikeouts, kind of like Dustin May couldn't transfer into strikeouts. So I love this. I know it's Milwaukee, so I mean, temper expectations, I suppose, because they love to swing and miss, but I love this out of Julio.
Yes. Obviously being a Dodger fan and being close to these guys and really trying to take away my fandom hat. And obviously I'm a lot of times harder on my players than most times, you know, avoiding Bellinger this year, things like that. But you know, this is the thing is sometimes you have to believe a little bit in somebody of that talent level breaking out and doing something that people, you know, like everybody and their mothers had him, for example, at projected at what, 8, you know, K9 or whatever, just whatever they've seen the last few years, not really expecting that breakout. Same thing with Christian Yelich as a hitter a few years ago. Oh, he only hits ground ball. Same thing with Vladimir Guerrero going into the season, like that extra gear that, you know, is possible with these talented guys. And so we've seen it a lot of times. You mentioned it about Dustin May. Now you're seeing the strikeouts. Now you're seeing it with Urias. So a lot of times these guys unlock. That's great to see. I'm sure he'll have some bad starts along the way, but he'll have some more double digit strikeout games too.
I would love to see, I mean, as a Dodger fan, you hate to see it. I would love to see him have a bad game here so I can go acquire more shares, because he's someone I absolutely don't have enough shares of. I want it everywhere and I want to get as much as possible. I totally believe in him. And I also believe in Jesus Luzardo, who I forgot to mention at the top. He actually pitched with a broken hand. Well, I mean, you know, a stress fracture, but he apparently broke it while banging it on a table playing video games. Dummy. He's gotten off to a rough start. He's admitted it's control issues, which he admitted to having last year. I get a lot of DMs about people wanting to drop him, which I get, you know, in a very shallow league, if you don't have a bench, he has a broken hand, I get it. There's going to be growing pains, but in Dynasty, I get these too. Don't give up. He's 23 years old. He throws 98 miles an hour as a lefty, which doesn't sound as impressive nowadays, but as a left-hander, that puts him as he's like the cream of the crop as far as velocity for left-handers. So we skipped over him. I just want to say that I know he's off to a rough start, but redraft is one thing, but in Dynasty, you know, acquire, do not get rid of Jesus Luzardo.
I'm on board with that completely. You know, everyone's going to kind of go through their warts here and there. And unfortunately what happened to him, but he's going to have a solid career.
Corey Kluber, too, one of the highlights, you said you picked him up. 8 innings, 0 and 10 strikeouts versus the Tigers. Again, it's the Tigers. Who cares? In this particular instance, who cares? 8 innings, 10 strikeouts for Corey Kluber. He's looked good. Jameson Taillon has looked better. We'll get to him in a second. But the Yankees here, you know, their gambles may be paying off. They can stay healthy. Kluber starting to get stronger and stronger every single game.
That's really the key. If these guys are going to be healthy, you know, there's going to be some good value in them throughout the course of the season. Of course, the problem is we all should be a little gun shy with AL East pitchers in general. I know that's changed a little bit with guys like Glasnow, but yes, these are difficult ballparks that they're playing in consistently, and in Fenway and Yankee Stadium and, you know, now Dunedin, it's wild. So there are going to be some rough roads ahead. But yeah, fantastic to see and crazy about Kluber, how he literally does this every single year, that it stinks every April and then just kind of turns it on in May. And it's just so funny that it happened to be May 2nd where we get this amazing start from him.
And his teammate, Jameson Taillon, 5 innings, 1 earned, 8 strikeouts versus those same Tigers. How do you feel about Taillon? His problem is I think off the top of my head, I believe this is only the second time he's gotten to the fifth. I think he's been stuck in the fourth for the most. How confident do you feel starting? How confident would you feel starting him? I don't know if you have shares or not with someone who, because there's plenty of them out there. So this is just an example, but there's plenty of pitchers that just you can never quite count on to maybe get to the fifth. I know Taijuan Walker was someone who was really running, and that's a different story. He's running up a pitch count. Taijuan obviously has health to worry about as well. Just those pitchers this year when teams are being more careful. If you are worried about them getting to the fifth, does that really detract from you starting them when you're filling out your lineup, or is it just like a talent over situation thing?
For the most part, it's talent over situation, unless the matchup is just, it just really looks scary and the pitcher seems off or his velocity is down or something like that. But actually, I have Kluber and Taillon on in this on one team together, which was scary for a little bit as my SP4 and SP5. But yeah, that was a very promising start. Good to see. Obviously, serving up a little bit more homers than we expect. His walk rate's right around what it's been over the course of his career, about 5% now. I think he's at 6% over his career, way up there with the strikeouts, which is nice to see. He's a little over 30%, where his career rate's around 21, 22. So, yeah, we just kind of hold steady with him so throughout the year.
Griffin Canning from the Angels, they've had blowups, but overall they kind of look promising of a team that looked like they pieced together this weird pitching staff. It looked like it was going to just go off in their face. It's been going well so far. And Griffin Canning, 5 1/3, 0 earned 9 strikeouts versus Seattle. He looked very sharp. Dylan Bundy's doing his thing, obviously. Andrew Heaney, you never know what we're going to get. I'm a big believer of his. Jose Quintana got off to a rough start, but he looked great in spring training, and he kind of looked okay. They could be okay in LA. Fingers crossed for Mike Trout. But, Griffin Canning, what do you think of him? He's someone who obviously was dealing with an injury last year we thought would be out long term. They decided to go the safe route, the non-surgery route with him. And he's back and looking okay.
I've watched him very closely ever since, in his season in AAA 2018, where I kind of followed him and knew he was going to be coming up. And then, obviously made his debut in 2019. But for some reason, I have some sort of bias against him. I just am not investing. I don't think I'm a huge fan. I'm kind of a snob with ratios, and I feel like he's somebody that crushes them from time to time. Like over the course of his career, 32 starts or whatever it was, has got about a 4.6 ERA. And, obviously, it's something he can improve on, but everything as far as a Sierra, XFIP, everything in terms of indicators sort of matches that. And so even though you're getting the strikeouts, you kind of just don't know what you're going to get from start to start. It's a great place to pitch when he's at home, good division to pitch in as well. But I'm staring at him in a 12-teamer, and I'm just not interested. Part of it has to do with his upcoming matchups, I think are somewhat tough. And maybe he proves me wrong, but I just don't think I'm in.
So let's assume you had a nice matchup in both of these next games, just neutral. They both look appetizing. Who would you have, Griffin Canning or Danny Duffy, who has morphed into a better version of himself than we've ever seen in his entire career? His last time out, 7 innings, 1 earned 7 strikeouts. I believe he's your American League ERA leader still, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. I never thought I'd say this, but I guess it would be Danny Duffy. He's a veteran, knows how to pitch. He had some tremendous success many, many years ago. Remember 2014, he had 25 starts of a 2.5 ERA, and even a couple more seasons that were pretty solid. ERAs under 4 and decent strikeout rates, I think over a K per 9 back in 2016. So obviously the guy's not going to hold an ERA under 2.5 over the entire season. He's going to hit some warts, of course. He's going to serve up some homers like he used to, but the Royals get a lot of really good matchups. And so, even in a situation neutral, I think I trust Duffy just a little bit more.
I was pounding the pavement for him last year before 2020, because I thought for innings wise, he was going to go out there and be the ace for the Royals, and his velocity was up in spring. And I was kind of doing it again this year, but for the same reason. I'm not saying I expected this. There's no victory lap for me. I told people to acquire him, but he seems to have been a little further away from his injury history, where I felt that he was going to go out there and deliver you innings. So I'm excited to see this, as I have a lot of cheap shares. Didn't expect this, definitely expect it to come back. But the further and further he gets away from, his serious injuries, the stronger he looks. And that's kind of the way it should be. So I don't want to say total mirage. He's just maybe out kicking his coverage a little bit here, but I don't want to undersell it, but 3.5 ERA. I think that's totally doable from Danny Duffy, and that's fantastic.
Yes, and the AL, that would be a fantastic thing. And to me, he might end up being like the left-handed version of Adam Wainwright. Of course, not as good. Wainwright was amazing in the bulk of his career, but in terms of longevity. So he's 32 now, and I can see the guy still pitching in the majors a few years from now. Maybe a kind of alternate good to bad seasons, but just a guy that's going to stick around.
Do you believe in people being hot? Like, has he proven enough where if he was going against, trying to think of just horrible matchup. I usually throw the Yankees out as my main comparison, but I mean, what, you know, if he's going against the Yankees, the Yankee Stadium, if he was in interleague play going to Coors, is Danny Duffy a guy you're throwing out every start right now, or is he still in the skeptical zone?
No. I think, that's tough. I mean, for example, I'm the biggest Lance McCullers fan you can think of, and he's going to Yankee Stadium. And if the Yankees' bats are warming up and it's going to be a little warmer there, I might be careful. Maybe it's stupid to kind of bench one of your studs, but if I have enough depth, that's something I'm going to consider doing. There are just certain starts that you just kind of feel, you just kind of know. Same thing, Anthony Descalfani. Like, he just had those fantastic starts. I'm like, I'm in. And then, oh, he's going to Philly? I don't know about that, you know?
Yeah, and I believe Lance McCullers is also lined up to face Gerrit Cole, which doesn't really feed into the coin flip situation if you're thinking about using him. Just because before we get onto a couple of hitters, we're almost nearing the end of the show here. Where is your line? If you could, you know, a metaphorical line or a specific one, if you can give us a player value, where do you draw the line where matchup proof? Is like if you had like Tyler Glasnow, let's go a little deeper than that. Is Tyler Glasnow is someone who would be matchup proof for you?
He's matchup proof. I'd say it's, you would think that even somebody like McCullers, I mean, somebody drafted among the top 100 overall is matchup proof. But yeah, I think it's situation dependent and it's context dependent based on your fantasy team, based on what the replacement options are. But for the most part, I guess you could say the top 20 guys or so, maybe 15 are matchup proof. Because
well, Jose, how about Jose Berrios? That's pushing that envelope a little bit.
In the wrong, in the tough road start, I do think that he's somebody that you could potentially bench just because he has a career of kind of, you know, screwing up on the road.
Yeah, I think that's I think he's just past maybe the safe guy, so he's maybe good. I get that asked a lot. It's tricky, like you said, because it's dependent. You know, it depends on situation, but sometimes people just want to, you know, in a vacuum, and that's what it is. A few hitters that are looking good. Aaron Judge, like Byron Buxton, like we don't have to talk about Byron Buxton. He's kind of hitting, you know, it's like beating a dead horse there. I don't think anyone ever avoided Aaron Judge because of his talent. They avoided him because of injury risk, and that's the whole thing with him and Giancarlo Stanton. If you were approached in a trade league for Aaron Judge, is there any kind of excitement you see, or are you an Aaron Judge guy, or are you an Aaron Judge avoider, I should say?
I was an Aaron Judge avoider up until last season. And then, I invested in him in some teams that ended up not happening. They all ended up getting canceled. Remember the 12 team OCs when everything hit in March. This year I was back in, acknowledging the risk, knowing what we have to deal with, and knowing the roller coaster that it is. I actually have him on two of my three most important teams and grabbed him as a fourth or a fifth rounder, just expecting and hoping for the, you know, basically the high end outcome, because when he does play, nobody hits the ball harder, is as consistent. He plays in Yankee Stadium, great lineup around him, hit 51 homers in his sleep, you know, in his rookie year, sophomore year. So yeah, just I am in on Aaron Judge, but I acknowledge it's a crazy roller coaster ride, and sometimes I like to kind of take those risks.
Do you just when you're investing in a player like that, do you just bake in like a do you just give him a certain number of at bats and then put a league average player in for the rest of the season? Like how do you prepare for when you're heavily investing? Which I know you're getting a big discount on Judge where you got him. How are you baking in kind of the risk? Are you drafting someone later, or are you just banking on like waiver wire production in case he's down?
Yeah, I mean it's mostly being a little bit more attentive to your outfield, because outfield felt like it was kind of thin to begin with, and just making sure that this is a team where, you know, for example, Dylan Carlson is my fourth outfielder. So that is a team I feel strongly about with my outfield, obviously not the power that he gives, but, and he's in my lineup anyway, so he's not the actual replacement guy, but yeah, when you draft someone like that, you have to pay a little bit more attention to that position, if not in your draft in the back end, at least in free agent bidding as you go.
Next guy on the list is JD Martinez, which I mean, it looks like it was the videotape. Either that or it was Alex Cora being gone and everything being thrown off. JD Martinez is about as in fuego as it goes. I mean, even Javier Baez, who's batting, I don't know, 180, but he still has like 6 home runs, 5 stolen bases. I'm making those numbers up off the top of my head, but they're close enough to accurate. So he's kind of doing his thing. He was always going to have a low batting average, but JD Martinez looks like he's just back to being JD Martinez. I was worried that he was just – I was one of those guys that just thought he was on a steady decline and he was never going to bounce back to what he was. I thought maybe he'd get somewhere in between like what he was in 2019. But he looks a little better than that so far.
Oh, yeah. He's fantastic. And the timing of everything was perfect with my drafts where I was in a Jordan Alvarez phase for a while and drafting him. But like right when my important drafts came up, I all of a sudden had some sort of like, I just have to get JD Martinez. What's he doing there at 9,500 overall? So invested. So far, I'm happy. Just pray he doesn't get hurt. But yeah, I mean, the guy's a beast and hopefully he gets us another 40 home run season.
Jared Walsh, another someone that a lot of people were investing in late, absolutely looks completely legitimate. I think everything that we saw out of him last year was possible. I didn't expect maybe the 300 batting average that we saw, but the power is very legitimate. I didn't have as much shares as maybe I would have hoped because I didn't trust the Angels. I didn't know if they'd wheel Albert Pujols out there for a victory lap tour and they would get him necessarily the at-bats I wanted. He's getting the at-bats. He looks great. Absolutely legitimate. I love Jared Walsh.
Yeah, late bloomer, obviously made his debut. I think basically broke through as a 27-year-old last season. And looks great so far. The only problem is the places where I had him, I actually sat him over the weekend, and so I missed that big production.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. The last guy we'll talk about is Nolan Arenado, who looks good, but he doesn't look like Nolan Arenado. Last year was for anyone paying attention, he was injured. That was always what the problem was. He had a shoulder thing. Now he's healthy, sitting like 270-ish. He's got like four or five home runs. So he kind of looks kind of like what projections expected, right? Mm-hmm. It looks like a typical drop down from going from Coors to St. Louis, which makes him a really good player. So what do you make of Nolan Arenado? Like if he kind of projected out, do you see him as like a even line with like a Paul Goldschmidt? Do you think he's a little more valuable than that? Where do you think his kind of value lies if this is what we're going to get? Because it lines up with what, you know, some sharp mm-hmm. people were expecting, and that just looks what it is right now.
Yeah, sometimes it's just Okim's razor. You know, what seems like the most obvious is what it is, and he's an aging guy, and he's out of Coors, and people that were going to say extreme, like, oh, he's going to all of a sudden suck or he's going to be like amazing. Just you don't have to go that far. It pretty much he is what he is. He's not going to hit 40 home runs again. He's probably not going to hit 300 again. You're getting basically what you paid for, maybe a little less. And so I'm just okay with him. And would I be surprised if Paul Goldschmidt had a slightly better season than him? No, not at all. I think they're about good value and I kind of like seeing them playing together.
I think if I'm in a draft league where I had someone where it was like they were excited or he looks healthy and he's playing well, I think I kind of try to unload him because the only thing is where I took whoever was the cheapest at Devers and Rendon, and they kind of alternated that third base group this year. So I took whoever mm-hmm. went last I'd wait till later because there's some, you know, Austin Riley. There was a lot of people that were later Yankees. I can't think of his name off the top of my head. Played shortstop today. Rochella. Yeah. So Arenado, the thing is with him is if he's not going to give you that for sure batting average, you know, he's like a rich man's version of Brian Anderson. Not that I don't want to degrade him, but you know, if he goes any kind of through of a slump of any kind, I don't see the real premium there. So if someone still wants to pay, I think this is what it is. If someone looks at this and thinks there's more there, I don't think there is. That's kind of the thing. Mm-hmm. I think this is what you're going to get. And if that's fine, good. If someone believes there's more, I'd ship them off if you can. So that does it. Did anything stand out to you over the weekend I didn't talk about? Because, you know, we talked a lot of hitters here. Anything before we sign off that you saw that was interesting?
No, you think you covered it pretty well. It was nice to see that Cubs Reds game go off with a whole lot of stuff. And I think Kimbrel gave up his first run. So that's about it.
Yeah, Kimbrel. Yeah, he only had like one hit going into the other day. All right, we'll be back next week, everybody. Before we ship off, Vlad, I want you to give your opinion on Luis Castillo. What's wrong with him? His velocity was up to 98 his last start, so it's looking like it's inching. It's inching towards the finish line. Do you expect him to be back to where he's supposed to be as it starts to heat up and he's getting away from that cold weather, or is he someone who's out very, very much worrying you?
No, he's not really worrying me. I think he's going to be absolutely fine so long as he's healthy and as we're seeing better signs every week, and it happens to the best of pitchers. So going through a little slump now, I think is a good purchasing opportunity, and I think people should do that if they can.
All right. Let everyone know where they can follow you, where they can find all your great work that you put out every week over with your fab article, every single thing. Plug everything.
It's RotoGut on Twitter and fantasyguru.com/MLB. That's where my weekly free agent column is. Do some other stuff and just really help people crush it at fantasy. And then on the DFS side, elitefantasy.com. And come play with us. Thank you so much, Matt, for having me. I really appreciate it.
No, thanks for being on. Sorry for being a little longer. It always runs long with me. I'm working on it. Everybody, follow me on Twitter at Matt Williams, M-E-T-T-W-I-7-7-I-M-S. Make sure to download the NBC Sports app on Android or Apple, absolutely free. And we'll be back next week with a weekend roundup. See everybody.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.